This is Morning Edition on NHPR. I'm Rick Ganley, and it's time for the New Hampshire News Recap. This week, a federal judge ruled that a state law restricting how schools can teach racism, sexism, and other forms of oppression is unconstitutional. I'm joined now by NHPR education reporter Sarah Gibson. Morning, Sarah.
Good morning.
Thanks for coming in. So remind us, Sarah, what this law required from schools and teachers.
Yeah, so the law is pretty long, but it says basically you can't teach that, teachers cannot teach that anyone is inherently racist, sexist, or oppressive, even if unconsciously, or that people should treat others differently because of their identity in any protected categories, so sexual orientation, race, religion, those kinds of things.
Now, lawmakers who backed this bill were inspired by a similar executive order from former President Donald Trump. Isn't that true?
Yeah. So some of the language is borrowed from the executive order, which was reversed by President Biden. But that language we see actually in laws that were passed by Republican majority state houses across the country.
Now, how did this practically impact teachers in the classroom when the law was in effect?
Well, that was largely the heart of the lawsuit. So the plaintiffs argued successfully that there were a couple of impacts, basically that some teachers were modifying their curriculum. They weren't teaching certain books that wrestled with race or mentioned racism explicitly. Or if they did teach those topics, they would shy away from certain discussions with students. The law also invited a lot more allegations by other staff members, by parents, by citizens. So even if a teacher was following the law, their material was coming under greater scrutiny by various people, including politicians, including in some cases the Department of Education misconduct investigator who was fielding complaints about material in classrooms. And there were a number of incidents like this that were referenced in the lawsuit that the judge ended up writing about in explaining why he was ruling in favor of the teachers' unions.
Yeah, the ACLU and teachers' unions suing the state over this law. And this is the first court ruling to strike down a law of this kind in the nation. So what stood out to you in the judge's ruling?
Well, the judge was pretty straightforward in siding with the coalition that brought this case, which is the ACLU, teachers unions, and LGBTQ rights group, et cetera, basically saying this law is so hard to understand. It's so vague in its wording that teachers do not know how to follow it and what precisely is going to get them in trouble. And that violates their 14th Amendment due process rights. He showed a number of examples in which it was unclear what the law actually meant in practice. And so that invited, he and the plaintiffs argued, invited kind of arbitrary enforcement. You know, sometimes a teacher might get in trouble, other times they wouldn't. It was unclear, you know, what would put them in hot water.
Again, the judge saying it's too vague. So how has the state been responding, Sarah?
So a spokesperson for the Attorney General's office said they're mulling next steps, which might include an appeal. If there is an appeal, that would be in federal court. This whole lawsuit is in federal court. So the case would end up at the Circuit Court of Appeals in Boston.
And you're hearing what from the groups that brought the lawsuit about a possible appeal?
It's a possibility.
What are the groups saying in general?
Yeah, I think right now they're celebrating.
Yeah.
And, you know, I spoke to a couple people who say, you know, this is an unambiguous ruling in support of us. You know, one thing that stood out to me, you were asking like what the judge said that was kind of remarkable. He basically said, this is a quote from him, this law has put teachers in, quote, an untenable position of having to wager their careers on a guess or else refrain from discussing matters that implicate the banned concepts altogether. So basically, their careers were at stake. So I spoke to a couple teachers who said this was, you know, kind of confirming or affirming what their experience has been in the last couple of years, of the judge's support for them. But again, like this could end up in the appeals process, so we don't know what's going to happen moving forward.
And you did hear from some folks here. We do have some sound. I wonder if you could set that up for us.
Sure. So one of the teachers who was referenced in the lawsuit and who the judge actually spoke about explicitly in the ruling, her name is Allison O'Brien. She's a social studies teacher, and she was investigated for videos that she played as part of her unit on the Harlem Renaissance. And when I asked her, you know, how this had a practical effect on what can be taught in the classrooms and how she's teaching, she actually talked about how she mentors newer social studies teachers. And because of this law, she would have to warn them, look, this part of the curriculum, these classroom materials, they're kind of in this gray area. So be warned, like this could get you in trouble. And then this is what she said about what the lawsuit, the result of the lawsuit could mean.
So I think even thinking about like mentoring new teachers, that doesn't have to be kind of this cloud over everything anymore. And I think that's going to make a real difference where I can just talk to, you know, new teachers I'm mentoring about what the best pedagogy is for the classroom, you know, to meet the standards. And I don't have to consider this law as part of that conversation.
Yeah. So that was basically, you know, what I heard from her. And certainly in this moment, you know, advocates for public education and teachers unions are celebrating. We're not sure what happens next, though.
And Sarah, thanks so much for being here. Governor Chris in his office was recently celebrating some data that, according to them, showed that New Hampshire's electricity prices are low compared to other states, thanks to state energy policies. But the numbers raised some eyebrows among some reporters. And I'm joined by one of them now, Amanda Gokey of the Boston Globe. Good morning, Amanda.
Hi, Rick.
So, Amanda, tell us more about what the governor said about our energy prices here in the Granite State.
So the governor released this bar chart basically saying, you know, look how great New Hampshire is doing compared to its neighbors. It said, quote, New Hampshire has held the line and put ratepayers first. And it showed how energy costs had increased compared to New Hampshire, with New Hampshire's increase at 0%. So other states were shown to be just astronomically higher. Rhode Island was 127% higher, Connecticut 94%, Massachusetts, this graph is claiming, was 83% higher. And so New News essentially saying, you know, New Hampshire is in really great shape because of and thanks to his energy policy. He said, you know, neighboring states have forced a transition to clean energy and they are paying the price, whereas New Hampshire has benefited from his approach of allowing the market to dictate which kinds of resources we use to power the state.
You know, this is really interesting because we've heard historically New Hampshire has rather high energy prices for the region. So why did you decide to fact check these numbers that the governor touted?
Well, I think the reason that you just mentioned is a great one. It flies counter to the kind of what ratepayers are seeing when they're paying their monthly bill. We kind of know, you know, our prices for electricity that you feel in your monthly bill have gone up. And there were a few other things that really jumped out to both me and my colleague, Stephen Porter, who did a lot of intense number crunching on this. So shout out to Stephen for all of that hard work. For one thing, you know, on its face, it just struck us as misleading to suggest that rates in New Hampshire haven't gone up at all. You know, this claim that New Hampshire has held the line, the 0%, energy prices have obviously gone up significantly during the time that Sununu has been in office. So we wanted to just look under the hood and figure out what calculations were required to make it appear as a flat line on the chart and whether that was in fact a distortion of the underlying data. And, you know, the bar chart also completely ignores Vermont, which is really a convenient omission for Sununu's team because Vermont's electricity rates are less expensive than New Hampshire, and they have increased less dramatically than New Hampshire. And Vermont is a state that has aggressively pursued clean energy.
And what do we know for a fact about New Hampshire's energy prices? I mean, as you're saying, we know that they are higher than neighboring states. Why do you think the governor was touting these numbers that turn out not to be true?
So we basically found that in order to get to these conclusions that an odd methodology had to be used, you have to use New Hampshire as a baseline and kind of just look at, okay, so New Hampshire's rate increased by 5.28 cents per kilowatt hour. You're comparing that to all of the other state increases. You know, it's it's a compelling political message. I think you could see from a political perspective why you would want to say I was in office starting at this point, ending now, and look how great it's gone. you know, even though Sununu obviously is not running for re-election, it has been a major issue. And, you know, I'm sure he's also thinking about moving forward and Republicans facing this issue and questions about energy policy in the next election cycle.
Sure.
But yeah, yes, you know, prices in New England are high compared to the rest of the country, relatively speaking. And among our neighbors right now, we are somewhere in the middle of the pack, looking right now more on the lower end, which is, you know, I think good news for everyone. The latest data is showing it's just about as expensive in Maine as New Hampshire, and Vermont is still less expensive. These rates are very volatile. And so the data bounces up and down pretty dramatically from month to month. So it can be a little dangerous to just compare two points in time,
sure,
as opposed to seeing that broader trend.
Yeah. Before we go, Amanda, I want to ask you about another story you reported on recently about local ostrich farms. You talked with a New Hampshire farmer who's pitching ostrich as a healthier alternative for red meat eaters. Can you tell us more about that farmer quickly?
Yeah, absolutely. So I first met Monte Cossette at the Concord Farmers Market, and he's selling cuts of this flightless bird. It is not cheap. He charges up to, you know, around $30 a pound. So he has really honed his pitch to consumers. He compares ostrich to the taste of red meat. He says it's very tender and doesn't have some of the sort of environmental or health baggage that we associate with beef. He seems to be having a lot of fun with this. He's really like leaning into the kind of cowboy persona. And I spent some time with him and the ostriches at his farm in Webster. The ostriches are huge. They can get up to 8 feet. They're kind of like dinosaurs. Cossette calls them 300-pound chickens. and he went into this about 5 years ago just because he wanted to do something more memorable. He's done a lot of work over the years in the trades. His wife is a veterinarian and already had a horse farm. So he did some market research and basically said, you know, I can sell ostrich. And he thought it would be both a lucrative and fun career.
Just quickly, have you tried ostrich?
Yes, I did try it
while
like reporting the story.
Yeah.
It was good. I was a little skeptical at first, but you know what? I think it was very tender, as Monte Cossette had pitched it to me.
All
and
right.
I think similar to red meat as well.
Well, I'll tell you, I haven't tried ostrich. I've tried gator, a little gamey, but maybe I'll try some ostriches. Amanda, we'll watch out for that story. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
The Boston Globe's Amanda Gokey. You can find more of her work, including the ostrich story, at bostonglobe.com/New Hampshire. I'm Rick Ganley. This is Morning Edition on NHPR.